to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business. It is the first week of June and the sun is shining for the Royal Welsh Grassland event in Pembrokeshire. I am Siobhan Howerton and welcome to this edition where we are celebrating the launch of the newly updated Recommended Grass and Clover List, RGCL. Here with me is Ellie Sweetman, a forage crop specialist at NIAB. So Ellie, here we are at the launch of the Recommended Grass and Clover List. It's very exciting to have the list available for farmers, especially with some new varieties added to the list this year.
Yes, the good thing about the Recommended List is it helps farmers to select the varieties for the mixtures that are going to be most appropriate for their management system, whether it's predominantly grazing or for silage, and working in conjunction with their advisors and merchants to formulate the mixtures that are going to be suitable for them. It's really useful to use the list because it gives them technical information on each variety that they can use for comparison in relation to their own circumstances.
And there's new varieties on the list this year, so we have 8 new varieties of ryegrass and 1 red clover and 1 white clover varieties.
Yes, we've got 1 early ryegrass, a cookie, which is good early seasonal growth, particularly when under the simulated grazing management that we do as part of the recommended list trialing system. We've got some late perennial ryegrasses, both diploids and tetraploids. And generally we're looking at growth throughout the season, mostly under simulated grazing management, Dundrod, Aston King, and Kendall, all diploids, as well as Glen Eagle, all do really well in grazing situations. And then we've got Well Done, Hoppy, and they both do well, again, under simulated grazing and overall conservation yields. We've got some good resistance to diseases in there, and it's now important that varieties have good disease resistance to get on and stay on the recommended list.
Great, thank you. And you've mentioned a bit of the trials that happen behind the scenes of the recommended grass and clover list, and you're heavily involved in these trials, aren't you, Ellie? Can you give us a little bit of information of what factors you're looking in on these trials?
Generally, we're looking for yield, but we're looking for yield in different managements, whether it's for conservation or for grazing. So the perennial ryegrass trials are in the ground for 3 years, 3 growing seasons. And the first one, we look at conservation yield and taking cuts and devalue. And then in the second, we're looking at simulated grazing, so more frequent cutting and defoliation, and back to conservation management for the third year. And we're looking at quality as well as yield, so that we can have a good all-round grass variety.
Perfect. So there's many factors to be considered, and it's easy to see why there's only as few as 1 in 20 varieties of ryegrass tested, making it to the full recommendations on the recommended grass and clover list. So if farmers are looking to do a reseed, why should they be using varieties on the recommended grass and clover list?
Well, over the last 10 years or so, we've seen an increase of 1% annually in yields that are achieved on the grasses that are on the recommended list. So those small improvements year on year from the very lengthy breeding process, which can be 12 years plus, there's a lot of time, investment and care goes in from those grass breeders to give us the top-notch varieties that we have today. Reseeding, you can increase your yield over a tired sward by 30-50% plus. Your grasses that you put in will be more responsive. Even if they were recommended list grass species you put in, say, 3-5 years ago, the varieties you'll be putting in now will be more responsive, but they're also a new fresh plant in the ground will be more responsive to nitrogen, and they will grow vigorously.
Thanks, Ellie, and thank you for your time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you very much, you too.
So with me now is Elaine Dukes, Director of the British Grassland Society. Are you having a good day at the show today, Elaine?
Yeah, not bad, Siobhan, thanks. We've had some interesting conversations with people and a new member.
So oh, that's really good.
Happy with that.
Yeah. And obviously today we're launching the Recommended Grass and Clover List, which BGS has been supportive of over the years.
Yes, we've got it on our stand as well, so we help distribute that through the year to various people as they buy it from our applications list. So yes, it goes out to lots of people over the coming year. And yes, we're on the project board for that as well.
Yeah, and involved in the selection process of the varieties going on the list.
Yes, some of that, yes, and some of the discussions that go on with that. That's always interesting, always interesting.
And from a BGS point of view, Elaine, why is it important that farmers use this recommended grass and clover list? What benefits?
Oh, there's massive benefits, really. I mean, yes, people know we're all about grass and forage. Grass and fed forages are the cheapest feeds, so for cost-effective livestock rearing, whether it's dairy, beef or sheep, they're vital. So making the best of you got with your grass, you know, is equally vital, and so consequently keeping up to date with the best varieties that are rigorously tested as part of the recommended list process, as far as I'm concerned, is really important.
Great, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Next up, we will hear from Joey Malone, a Forage for Knowledge contributor farmer, about why he uses the recommended grass and clover list.
Hi, my name is Joey and I'm the farm manager at Nether Garrel. Our seeding policy at the moment, we reseed based on poor performing paddocks. We'll measure weekly and look at the annual tonnage grown, reseed based on that info. We use the recommended list to compare the top grass varieties against each other. We select the traits that we're looking for, eliminate the grasses that don't suit our needs, and select the ones that do based on that. Characteristics we look for, tetraploid and diploid mixed together for some wetter ground, and probably all tetraploids in on some drier ground. We go for late heading varieties so that we can maintain quality for as much of the season as possible, and we also try and keep the heading date together so in each other. So my top tips, I'm more a fan of tetraploids. You get good graze outs. Yeah, I get great graze outs, great palatability, and great milk as a result of it. Lean for similar heading dates so that the whole paddock is going to seed at the same time.
Now is Helen Matthews from Germinal. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy day on the stand to talk to me, Helen. Yeah. You've had a good day at the show?
We've had a very busy day. It's good to see so many farmers here. Not only here to see all the equipment and the mowing and the harvesting of grass, but also they've had a lot of interest in what we've got on our stand today, which is all the new varieties, but also we've got some multi-species swards growing here. We've got different herbs and legumes making up part of that multi-species sward, and we've had a great deal of interest in those today. So very interesting day, very good day for us.
Oh, that's really good to hear. And obviously the new varieties that you mentioned, they would be on the recommended grass and clover list.
Exactly.
Which is being launched today. So just talk a little bit about why maybe some farmers would be thinking about introducing clover into their grass lays. What would be the key benefits in that situation?
So the key benefit of including clover, I suppose you should see really start to say, well, there's two sort of common types of clover, would be the red clover and white clover. So red clover, it's obviously a much more bulky plant and is more suitable for sort of silage lays and maybe lamb finishing and that sort of thing. But also you're adding another source of protein into the lay, you're adding another species into the lay, so there's a little bit more diversity, different rooting depths and so on from the red clover, but also it's taking nitrogen from the air and it's feeding the soil and the plants immediately around it as well. So there's that nitrogen fixing benefit as well as the, you know, the added protein and the protected protein that we get from red clover. White clover, completely different plant, much more suitable in the sort of medium to much longer term lays, where we've got this sort of creeping plant that can spread right throughout the sward with the stoloniferous growth. But again, it will fix nitrogen, takes nitrogen from the atmosphere, and it can help you reduce your reliance on manufactured nitrogen. It's obviously a key part of an organic lay, and like that, as you know, it's going to provide protein for the animal in the nutrition as well as nitrogen for the surrounding crop. So it's a big, you know, there's a few hurdles for people to get over in terms of managing legumes, managing clovers in swards, and weed control is something that we get asked a lot about. But really, you know, to broaden the diversity of your sward, the potential that's there, and the modern varieties that are there now, so we've got different growth characteristics for some of the white clovers, we've got red clovers that now last for 5 years. You know, the potential for them is enormous if we can just persuade a few more farmers to buy into them.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully the recommended grass and clover list provides that information as well, top tips on how to manage clover in a reseed and also the best varieties to use in different systems. If farmers are thinking of doing an autumn reseed, Helen, what would be your top tips for selecting grass and clover mixtures for that system?
Okay, so my first question to the farmer is, what do you really want to use it for? Yeah. And think about how long you want that to last, and really try and pinpoint the main use of that lay. So is it 3 or 4 year silage lay? Is it a longer term silage lay? how much grazing do you really want and so on. And then if your focus is on, say, silage, a common thing now with a dairy farmer would be, say, a multi-cut silage. But they also want it to last a longer time. So you're really looking at selecting varieties that give you that added persistency. So it's intermediate and late perennials. But then a blend of diploids and tetraploids that are going to give you both the advantage of the conservation yield, but also ground cover and persistency. And that will give you that year-round quality for that multi-cut. So we're not looking for something that's very aggressive early on and then opens up in the bottom and goes stemmy in mid-season. We're looking for a lay that can produce year-round quality for multi-cuts. The information is here in the recommended list, but we're looking for that long-term cutting. It's perennial ryegrasses. So they're here, we've got them listed, you know, the intermediate, early intermediate and late perennials. And ideally for cutting lays, we want a fairly narrow heading date range. We don't want, you know, early tillers with seed heads in, and we don't want things that head a lot later. So the narrower the heading date range, the sort of the closer the growth curve of all those varieties within the sward sort of resemble each other, and then you know you're managing multiple varieties as if it's actually one variety, and you're producing consistent quality throughout the year without, you know, seed heads popping up at different times of the year.
And all that information is available in the list, as you mentioned. You just mentioned a mixture of diploids and tetraploids. Can you just give me a quick definition of what the difference is between the two?
Okay, so from a plant breeding point of view, it's actually to do with chromosomes. So tetraploids have twice the number of chromosomes to the diploid compared to diploids. But what that actually looks like in the plant itself, so diploid, they're more dense plants, they have slightly finer leaves, but there are more tillers to the plant, they're denser, therefore you've got better ground cover. It tends to be a more prostrate growth habit. So tetraploid, because you've got that slightly bigger plant cell, tends to be slightly more upright, tends to be slightly broader leaf, often a darker leaf, a more upright growth habit. So they tend to give us much better conservation yields when we look at the, you know, the production data for tetraploids on your recommended list. They're more open potentially and more upright in their growth habit when you compare them, put them side by side with a diploid. The two compete very well together. You know, there are synergies of mixing diploid and tetraploid together. Tetraploid tends to be bigger seed, so often tetraploids are associated also with overseeding. No, not exclusively overseeding, but because it's a bigger seed, there's slightly less number of seeds per kilo, so you must always think about that when you're looking at the balance of your mixture, your diploids and your tetraploids. So a kilo of diploids is probably less seeds per kilo than your diploid, so that's something to consider when you're looking at your mixture as well.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time today, Helen.
That's a pleasure. Thank you, Sue.
With me now is Danny from UCD, who's just started a 6 weeks placement with HDB. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing during your time with us, Danny?
Yeah, so I'm doing my placement with HDB. I'm a master's student with University College Dublin, doing a master's in agricultural extension and innovation. And while I'm here in HDB, I'll be doing a project on multi-species swards or herbal lays. So the title of my project is Best Practice and Knowledge Exchange for Farmer Adoption of Multi-Species Swards. So the aim of the project is to look into the benefits of multi-species swards and maybe the possible limitations with sowing them, and looking into the drivers and barriers for uptake of multi-species swards, and how to best put together a knowledge exchange program for increasing adoption and helping support farmers who are using multi-species swards.
So especially after last year over here in Great Britain, there was an increased interest in multi-species swards following the droughts that we had. Yeah. So hopefully there'll be plenty of farmers out there that have experience with using multi-species swards within their rotational grazing.
Yeah, so from what I can see so far, there's a big interest in it, and that's obviously off the drought last year, because your perennial ryegrass can be susceptible to drought because it doesn't have very deep roots and different things.
So while you're here at HDB, you're looking for farmers who are using these herbal lays to have a chat with them and learn a bit from their experience. So how should they get in touch with you if they're using these systems?
So if you have any interest in being involved in the project, you should contact Forage for Knowledge, and we'll give more detail of the work into the project, and you can get involved.
Great, thank you very much, Danny, and good luck with your project. Yeah. That is it for now. Thanks for listening. For your copy of the recommended grass and clover list and other grassland resources, visit AHDB Grass. In the next podcast, we take a look at what work AHDB is doing to support marketing.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information, and follow us on Twitter at @thehdb to stay up to date.